Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt, along with Stanford Steve, bring you high-level sports analysis as well as stories as two dads raising their kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate to see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the most stressful game in the history of the NCAA tournament. But first... All right, man. Hey, it's a sports podcast. You know, we're going to get to all that stuff. But come on, man. I know what y'all talking about. That's what everybody talking about. I wasn't watching it live, and it reminded me a lot of another event that I wasn't watching live where all of a sudden somebody hits you up and tells you about it, and then you spend the rest of the night basically watching it. And that's how it went for me with the Malice at the Palace. And basically, we wound up with the virtual equivalent, at least as far as the standards of the Oscars go, because Will Smith just got up out of his chair, rolled up, and smacked the shit out of Chris Rock. To the point where on live TV, Chris Rock said, wow, Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me. Because that is exactly what happened. Like, somebody sent me a text and was like, yo, did you see this Will Chris thing? And I was like, nah, I wasn't watching the Oscars. You know what I mean? We shot a TV show that day. I ain't watching none of the movies. Like, it's not really my bag, you know? And I'm like, oh, Will, I don't even know who Will and Chris are. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got no clue who we talking about. Man, next thing I know, I get that link and it says something about Will Smith smacking Chris Rock. And I'm like, oh, that can't possibly be what happened. And then I see the clip, and that is exactly what happened. And you had the people on the internet like, oh, man, that was staged. The only reason to think that that was staged is just because it was impossible to believe that that would happen in real life. Like, there was nothing about the appearance of the actual event that would lead you to believe that that was staged. That was pretty clear. Whether or not you heard Will Smith screaming off stage or not, we had to go to our Japanese brothers and sisters to get that clip, apparently. But no, nah, wasn't nothing staged about that. Will Smith had had enough. Enough, I tell you. Enough. Now, I understand where a lot of people are coming from, because a lot of us done had jokes about Will over the last few months, couple years, whatever it is. Quite honestly, this ain't really been a great look for him, I don't feel, in these last few years. He's going through something in his journey. I feel like it's not necessarily my place to judge him. Everybody has their ups and downs. However, you know what I'm saying? You, the dude whose wife came out here telling everybody about how it was good loving, body rocking, knocking boots with like her son's homeboy. And you sat there right next to her while it happened. I don't know how y'all get down over there. I'm just saying it didn't look good to the rest of us. You can say we wrong for it. You can judge us for it. That's fine. I'm just telling you what isn't a good look. Like, you remember that time that Dirk Nowitzki was dating that con artist and it all like blew up during the playoffs and my homeboy had to line about it. Like, look, man, I ain't saying Dirk's to blame. I ain't saying it's his fault. All I'm saying is your girlfriend steal jewelry. That's it, right? Like, that's in the end when it all comes back around. You the dude with a girl who steals jewelry. And he ain't with the girl that steals jewelry no more. Just to be clear, things were taken care of. They dealt with that. Before that time period, you was the one with the girl who stole jewelry. It's about to be jokes. It's about to be. You're not the only person that's been with the one who steals jewelry, but enough of us have not that it's about to be jokes. And Will Smith been catching these jokes from so many people for like the last couple of years. And then next thing you know, Chris Rock, who told a Jada Pinkett joke in 2016, told another one. It was in a bit of a sensitive place because, and I didn't know this, but Jada Pinkett has alopecia, so she has like difficulties with her hair. And so Chris Rock said that she looked like she was going out for G.I. Jane 2. She wasn't there for it. And then while she's there and she's not there for it, Will Smith is there. And I am adapting this from something my man Joel Anderson said on text yesterday, but it was too good for me to not bring into this show. And what Will Smith went through was a very similar situation that my homeboy D Nunn went through back in 96. And D Nunn's my homie from California, and he had moved to Oklahoma and he was living with his pops. And, you know, it ain't always all good. And something happened. He said that they had a little dust up or whatever. He went to the back. He went and got his mind right. And he said he was in there listening to Pac. And he said, Pac said bomb first. And so he went and he bombed first. Now, for D Nunn, the ending of the story involves the phrase, when I woke up. And he said that when he woke up, he had a knot. Pops caught him with a two-piece and a pepper. Will Smith, however, was not at Chris Rock's house. He was at the Oscars. But still, he's sitting there next to Jada, and he looked at her, and he was like, I know what Pac would do right now. Pac would bomb first. And so he got up there, and like Pac, he bombed. He went ahead and did it. You know what I'm saying? Like, finally, after all this time, after all this worrying that Will Smith has done in his life about not being Tupac, right? Apparently, he talked about it in that book that I was never going to read. But he just talked about how he wished that he was more like Tupac. He wished he had that Tupac in him. And he had his Tupac moment. And he went up there and he slapped Chris Rock in the face. And folks, I got to tell you something. If you don't think that man made a fool of himself, you are a fool yourself. He absolutely made a fool of himself. Now, we can make the argument that Chris Rock was wrong for that. Probably shouldn't have done it. Somebody in the process probably should have screened that out a little bit and been like, hey, man, going a little too far. But see, I can see how that doesn't happen. Like, I work on this comedy show that I'm doing right now. And the one tricky thing about working on a show with a bunch of people writing jokes and coming up with stuff, they don't think about stuff being too far. All they think about is whether or not the stuff is funny. Because they're not going to be the ones that's got to fight when it comes down to it. Like, I'd be looking through this stuff and I'd be like, hey, man, I actually know these people. I will encounter them. Like, no. We go fall back a little bit. Like, true story. I don't feel no problem putting this out there. This is just one of these things that happens. So we had Vince Staples on Game Theory last week. And, you know, we were coming up with the lead for it. And the one we settled on was something like, he's a beast with the microphone. He's a Clippers fan, but I'm not talking about Billy Crystal. Whatever the first incarnation of it was like a Billy Crystal slam. And I was like, damn, what Billy Crystal do? Like, how Billy Crystal wind up catching this straight? But what they don't know is, I do this show with Bob Costas called Back on the Record. Gabe, you want to know who one of our guests is on this week's episode? You want to know a part of why Billy Crystal might be the guest? Because my showrunner over there's name is Jonathan Crystal. Billy Crystal is his uncle. Yeah, yeah. Like, if there was a chance we was going to have Coach K on the show, I was willing to roll the dice on that one. Like, we wasn't personal about him, but just out here taking an unnecessary... Billy Crystal, I feel like he's brought us lots of joy over the course of time, actually. But these cats are messing around and have you out here getting your ass whooped. And Chris Rock dropped that one, and it must have just never dawned on him, Gabe. Because it was very clear to me that Will Smith was walking up there to smack him. Like, maybe I knew it, you know, going in, so it seemed obvious. What else he think Will Smith was there to do? Chris Rock was just like, there ain't nobody about to come slap me at the... Oh, somebody just slapped me on stage at the Oscars. Come on, man. You go holler at that man after the show. You know, you go holler at him backstage. Whatever it is, right? However, Will Smith had enough. That wasn't about no one joke. That was about years, decades of y'all Breaking Bad with that man. And then got up there with his acceptance speech and all that crying about Richard Williams is a man who defended his family. I ain't seen one time in that whole movie that I watched it. I ain't seen one time in that movie about Richard Williams rolling up on somebody and whooping their ass. Did you see that? I did not. Will came up there and turned them hips. Like, I will give him that. He didn't advertise that that was what he was doing. Like, you should have known. Like, for Chris Rock, did he feel that calm in the air? You know that, like, super calm that hits the air right before it jumps off? Like, I ain't been in a fight in a really long time. But I think a lot of y'all know exactly what I'm talking about, right? It's gone too far. And the moment you realize it, it's like everything goes silent. And then next thing you know, whoo, we right back. It's like they press pause on one of them Mayhem commercials. You know what I'm saying? It's like, all right, boom. Now we back. And he stole on them. And Chris Rock still had to give out that award. Poor Questlove. Tap danced all over your moment. You won an Oscar. Man. And then this whole thing happened. But no, Will was, yeah, you know, I got to defend my family. And he was just going all over the place. He ain't nowhere to start. Wow. 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 Gabe, I know you had a lot going on. You was traveling and stuff like that. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Chris Rock had an incredible chin, though. He just took it. Was more surprised than anything else, yes. But it looked like a really clean hit that would have hurt a lot.
Well, it was an open hand slap, right? Like, that's the level of disrespect that Will was operating from. And I got to be honest, I feel like to truly convey what he was going for, he needed to come with the backhand slap. Like, the backhand slap, I think, was really much more in line with what the moment was, right? And what it was that he was feeling right then. Like, the heated taste of the back of my hand, right? Like, he needed to come and hit him with that one. That was the direction that I thought that he might have gone. I just sat there all night, like, yo, I just can't imagine getting slapped in the face, right or wrong, and then having to continue doing what I was doing. We can hear Will say, keep my wife's name out your mouth. Why didn't you say that while you was up there? It's a whole lot that I didn't fully understand, but I thought that Chris Rock was going to be waiting around the corner like Jack Ruby. Like, that whole thing was going to part. Will got his Oscar. Oswald! And then it was going to be, you know, business was going to happen. Shout out to Tyler I Am. You know, I don't be looking at my own Twitter timeline. I'm tweeting more, but I still don't look at the timeline. Tyler got to that joke like 30 minutes before I did. I was like, damn, he brilliant. I feel like that's kind of self-aggrandizing for me to say, but still, I had to give him props. It was still a great line, and I was going to share it because I believe in attribution. But yeah, I do wonder, though, looking back, that's the thing, Will. Pac wouldn't have just stopped at slapping him once. Keep it real. I bet they ain't got no metal detectors at the Oscars. Pac would have pulled the tool. And you know how I know they ain't got no metal detectors at the Oscars? Because they ain't got no security in front of the stage. And the only reason that they ain't got no security at the front of the stage is that they figure they don't need no thing like that. Where were you in 1998 when Old Dirty Bastard jumped up on stage at the Grammys? You definitely need security at the stage. Where were you when Kanye did that, right? I guess at them other award shows, it'd be all flashy and controversial when something happens. It fits into the personality of the event. At the Oscars, y'all need security. Y'all need to make this stop. Will Smith figured it wasn't. Like, he was crying, and he like Denzel Washington had to take him to the side and everything. I ain't heard not one thing about nobody coming to Chris Rock's defense. Not one. He got slapped in the face at the Oscars. And everybody's just like, oh, poor Will. He must have really been going through it. He probably should have nipped this in the bud a lot sooner.
Did you see that Will's publicist came to see him a couple times?
Had to.
Yo, it would be really beneficial for your career if you do not do that again.
Like, yo, you need to lead in. He also got up there. He apologized to the Academy. He had no apology for Chris Rock. None whatsoever. He was like, him, I do it again. Chris Rock had all these parties he probably wanted to go to. And by the way, here's the most two Americans thing, and I'll close on this. I got up this morning. I saw a news report that said Chris Rock declined to put in a police report. What white person came up to Chris Rock and asked him if he wanted to call the cops about this? As if it was bad enough he got slapped in the face in front of everybody, right? But I'll tell you a story. My homeboy George went to high school in Dallas, and he said this cat was breaking bad with this white dude, just talking crazy to him. And he referred to him as a big-eared racial slur. But he didn't realize that big-eared racial slur knew some form of one of the kung fu arts. And he said, buddy came. hit him with a roundhouse kick that caught him three times on one swing. He said, buddy, missed school like 2-3 weeks. Say he come back and they're like, yo, you good? And he was clearly in the wrong, right? They're like, oh, you good? Yeah, man. Your mom's thinking about pressing charges. No. That's not going to improve your situation at school one single bit. Are you going to put in a police report? What, and lose whatever dignity I had left? What, are you high? Shout out to you, CBS. You are the biggest winners of the NCAA tournament. Not only do you get four schools in the Final Four who have won multiple championships, not only do you get four schools that I might be able to make the argument have been like the best four college basketball programs of the last 20 years. Like Kansas, their unrelenting consistency. We got what, the four Final Fours and two national championships from Villanova. We got three national championships and God knows how many Final Fours for Carolina. Duke, we're looking at two national championships, three, four Final Fours. And they got a Duke-Carolina game in the national semifinal. You are the winner. The losers are all the Duke and Carolina fans. I pity you right now. I cannot imagine how stressful this week is about to be. I cannot. 10 years ago, we had a very similar situation where Kentucky and Louisville matched up in the national semifinal. And it was also a similar situation in the sense that that Louisville team had not played especially well in the regular season and got it together in the tournament and then made the Final Four. And then they got, you know, the rivalry rematch. But the difference is that Louisville-Kentucky game is played at the end of December. It wasn't just played like 3 weeks ago. The other difference is Louisville didn't shut down like John Calipari's career that year, right? They didn't put the exclamation point on the retirement tour, given their rival one of the most embarrassing losses ever. That's just not the case of what happened there. This one, Carolina got their upset. They won a game they had no business winning, and they won it by a lot, and they won it in their house, and they won it right before the going away ceremony, and they won it in such a fashion that forced Coach K to embarrass himself with that whole this was unacceptable thing, right? It looked like Duke's season was about to be lost. Now it's starting to look like that was an inflection point maybe as to how it was that they turned this whole thing around. And so North Carolina went and stomped out Cinderella, and you're going to have Duke and Carolina playing that late game, CBS getting all that money. However, I'm going to tell you what I would do if I was Hubert Davis. And please understand, man, there's some folks ready to run Hubert out on a rail after they lost that home to a terrible Pittsburgh team, okay? It was ready for it. It's not been the smoothest year for North Carolina, but they did come around and pick that thing up. But Hubert already got the biggest win that he's ever going to have. He already did. And that was that win at Cameron. If I was Hubert, if I was coaching North Carolina, you know what my strategy would be for this next game? We ain't going to play. That would be my strategy. We not showing up. Duke wants to go to the title game. Y'all can have it. It ain't no thing to me. Go ahead. Some things in this world are bigger than championships. And I feel pretty confident saying, not all of them, but a significant portion of the University of North Carolina fan base would rather end Coach K's career on an L than win a national championship. Tell me I'm wrong. It would be just like in the first season of The Simpsons if I was Hubert Davis. I would like to announce my retirement undefeated from video boxing. Never again. No, sir. You're not going to get the chance to avenge this L. It would be the ultimate in pettiness. It would be the most college basketball thing, actually, that you could ever do. Rivalries matter more than titles, man. That's the stuff that carries all for real. Nope. Never again. Coach K will never get a chance to avenge this victory. Are we scared of losing to y'all? Nope. We just don't see the point of playing. Don't see it. Wouldn't even come. Whole team would just be in Chapel Hill wearing t-shirts that had the date of when they played that game against Cameron. If I was the athletic director at North Carolina, it would be a banner for that game that we won over Coach K. And we would take that banner down every time before we went to Cameron, and we would hold that banner up as we walked on the floor. And I would remind him every single time we sent y'all's man out of here on a L. Forget that. You can have the Al McGuire Coach K situation where he walks out on top. The John Wooden situation walks out on top. You can have that. Ain't no hating here, baby. Y'all got a really good team. Good for y'all. Go ahead. Make that happen. But it ain't going to happen at our expense under no circumstance whatsoever. People be like, oh, man, that's being scared. That ain't being scared. It's being petty. It fundamentally comes down to being petty. You will have no joy on our watch. None whatsoever. Now, option two for Carolina, they need to win it. But with, what's my man's name? Brady Manick, the dude that transferred from Oklahoma, the white dude. They need to win, but with him scoring like 55 points and Duke's young Afro-American freshman like playing lazy, not being heady, not being coaches on the floor, make the Duke fans get deep down into the depths of their true soul and get beat by somebody over there with a yeoman-like work ethic. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that reminds you of what you used to be when you loved it a little bit more. Maybe that's the way that it needs to go. Yeah, but hell no, I'd never play Duke again. Never again. No chance. No chance. Wouldn't be me. Wouldn't be me. By the way, while we're on the tournament, I want to talk about this before we roll out. As many of you know, I'm not really about that underdog life. I don't really support it. I don't relate to underdogs. I'm a 7.5-point favorite every time I take the floor. I don't really know like what it is for y'all, but I view myself through the context of the people that's supposed to win. So I just don't typically, you know, get behind the whole underdog steez, you know. I get it. We just all have different kinds of self-esteem. Anyway, roll down to St. Peter's for game theory to go talk to the students. And I got to tell you something, man. I came away like so charmed by the place and by the students. Because, like, we was coming up with questions to go down there and ask them, and we had just totally misjudged, like, what kind of school it was. You know, like, they were expecting to go down there. I mean, I can't say they. I was honest. Like, we was expecting to go down there and be like, yo, name three players on the team, and they stop after two. Problem is, the school only got 3,000 students. Everybody knows everybody, right? Like, they all know each other. And they were so, like, legitimately gassed about what had happened. We was trying to find out, you know, what was going on campus that night. We're like, yo, man, what's the wildest thing you saw? Oh, man, it was just people jumping up and down in the gym. I'm like, damn, y'all was doing this wrong. But wow, this is, you know, it's kind of heartwarming, like the way they hold get down is. And we, you know, we joked on here about how it looked like it was an HBCU. I mean that in a good way. I get the feeling somebody from St. Peter's heard what I had said about the place, and I don't think they appreciated the charm, because I asked one kid down there, I was like, so, did you know you were coming to an HBCU? And he was just kind of like, yeah, people have jokes about that. They sensitive about that, it sounded like, in a way that I didn't expect. I wasn't trying to exacerbate nothing. I'm an HBCU grad, right? Like, I think it's extra dope. But I found myself kind of fascinated by, like, what generally is Jersey City's get down, but also, like, the church down there. And what I mean by the church is, if you get a chance, Adrian Wojnarowski wrote a book called The Miracle of St. Anthony. That's a really good one. And it's about, he spent a year with St. Anthony's High School in Jersey City, which is where Bobby Hurley's daddy was the coach. And it was a really interesting Jesuit school in that they were keeping the tuition low and they were serving, you know, the folks in Jersey City. They eventually had to shut down just because they couldn't make the margins and keep the tuition at the rate that they needed to serve the people that they wished to serve. But St. Peter's had a very similar vibe in terms of who it is they serve. Like, you may not know this. That school was like 40% Latino. I want to say it's only 16% white. I think the black population is higher than the white population is. Like, there seems to be a much different aim for what that school is trying to do. They ain't got no bread for athletics. Like, it's not a school where they got money to pay like all these assistants and everything else. And what I loved about that squad, what about that team was so intriguing to me was very often when you see those low seeds like find a way to get there, it's kind of dependent on the other team not playing well or they're doing something wild gimmicky like shooting a zillion three-pointers or trying to slow the game down and slop it up or just fouling all the time and stuff like that. And the dudes are just out there playing hard basketball, just taking it to the rack, just going hard. Like the ethos of that squad was so admirable in that they were just like, yo, we're going to play you. That's it. They weren't trying to trick anybody or anything else. They just decided they was going to show up and they was going to play basketball. And that's what they did. So if you get a chance, man, check out at Game Theory HBO. Check out the Twitter account. We went out there and talked to some students. We talked to my man, Matt. Matt's like the biggest fan of anything I've ever seen. And when he's not a fan, he's the biggest not fan of anything that I've ever seen. But go check that out, man. And St. Peter's, kudos to the school in general, the basketball team, all of that stuff. Like, I really went down there and was like, yo, what they got going down here is a really dope situation. And so I'm happy for the school that it happened. I guess I'm getting at that age, right? Where I go down there and I'm like, wow, there's a certain purity to the spirit of the place. But it was. If you haven't heard, it's brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
This first story comes from Metro.
This is Alexis Stevens with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Date night for one Georgia couple involves stealing a school bus and taking it on a joyride, according to police. But the fun came to an end when the two crashed the bus into someone's fence. The next trip was to the county jail. Shortly before 4 a.m. last week, a homeowner called 911 to report a school bus had crashed onto his property. The two on the bus, Cody Dalton Green and Haley Michelle Turner, both appeared to be intoxicated, and they were restrained by neighbors until deputies arrived at the scene. Investigators believe the couple went onto a middle school campus and broke into a bus, which they then used to push open a gate at the school. The two even pushed their own car out of the way with the bus during their joyride, according to police. The two crashed less than a mile later. Green and Turner, both 21 years old, were both arrested on a long list of charges, including theft, interference with government property, and drug possession.
What sounds joyful about driving a school bus? That's all I'm saying, is if you decided you were going to do this for a joyride, and you're 20, like, I understand if you were 16 and were like, yo, want to steal a school bus? I could see how that stupid idea might seem to ride for you. As a real live adult, that's really what you want to do, huh? Okay. Wow.
I'm guessing at 21, you haven't done a lot of your own moves and had to drive a U-Haul. That is quite possibly like the second worst part about moving, aside from lifting all the heavy boxes and getting stuff into the apartment, is having to drive the U-Haul truck on the freeway and stuff like that.
Dog, if you got to drive a school bus, you got to take a class first. That's all I'm saying.
All right, this next story comes from Tech.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, a technology reporter for the Washington Post, and I recently wrote a story about digital resting points. Digital resting points, or digital rest stops, as they're sometimes called, are videos created to give users on social media kind of a break from their feeds. So for instance, say you're scrolling through TikTok and you see suddenly a video that says, congratulations, you've reached a digital resting point. Just like a calming video of maybe like rain on a field or, you know, the ocean or a still life. And the goal of these videos is to just help people relax. A woman named Gabby, she goes by Cy Swoon, I guess, on Instagram, originally created the concept of the digital resting point video. And then it's become this really popular format that tons of users are doing. So people create these digital resting points just for fun. It's a way for them to kind of show a relaxing scene and give them a break, I guess, from social media. And I wrote this story because more and more people are turning to kind of internet spaces that allow them to have a break from social media without actually logging off. So it was really interesting to me. And I think hopefully we'll see a lot more digital resting points around in the future. I feel like we could all use them.
I have to say, as she said, that, you know, this is for people, you know, so they could get a break from social media without logging off. Have you considered logging off? I just want to run that by you. Give it some thought. Like I'm telling you, I'm saying this is somebody that's basically been logged off for 3 months. I'll go on and look if I see there's a story, because Twitter is probably a better way to look for something than Google at this point, like immediate things. So I'll go on for something like that. I check what people are saying about these shows. You know, I go through my own mentions, but like the timeline itself, don't really do that. And I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And I might be, right? Like there was a time where I didn't have to watch the Oscars, but I would have seen the Chris Rock thing. But the things that really happened, somebody probably gonna tell me about it. Like it's almost like if it ain't important enough for somebody else to tell me about it, maybe it wasn't that crucial in the first place. But I'm just saying, give some thought to just actually logging off. Consider it. Because this whole thing is so busted if these spaces that we actually curate for ourselves, like you think about it, your Twitter timeline, that's self-curated. You're making the decision of what to put on there. And no matter who I'm talking about, all of us make the decision of who to put on there and then wind up coming to hate the stuff that's over there, right? Like if you're setting up your own timeline, but you still need somebody to put in a break, what have we done? That's all I'm saying. Like all that's done and you still need something to be like, yo, I need to take a breather on this. What have we done?
Yeah, it's almost like a metaverse thing, something you can never leave because you're always tied to it.
Yep. We're doomed, man.
This last one comes from science. Here it is.
Hi, my name's Katie Hunt. I'm a journalist at CNN in London, and I'm going to speak to you about a story I worked on about the Amazon rainforest. The Amazon rainforest is a hugely important ecosystem, and it's crucial for the health of the planet because it's home to a unique array of animals and plant life, and it stores a huge amount of carbon, and it also has big influence on weather patterns regionally in South America and globally as well. Now, a new study led by scientists at the University of Exeter say that about 3/4 of the rainforest is now showing signs of what they called resilience loss. Now, this is kind of a loss of durability, a reduced ability to recover from disturbances like droughts, logging and fires. And what was particularly unique about their study is that they used kind of real world observations to come to these conclusions, and it wasn't a computer model. Now, they looked at month-by-month observations from satellites and satellite sensors from the past 20 years. And they use that information to kind of map the biomass of the rainforest. That's the area's organic material. That showed us how it has changed in response to kind of warmer temperatures and other fluctuating weather conditions. And the authors say that this kind of decreasing level of resilience since the early 2000s is a warning sign of irreversible decline. Now, what they mean by this is that, you know, the rainforest could eventually disappear. It would become more of a savanna landscape with kind of grasslands. We'd still have some trees, but those trees would be widely spaced. It certainly wouldn't have like that canopy of trees that we see today. And obviously this would be of huge significance to the planet if this happened. The rainforest is a huge store of carbon. You know, by some estimates, there's 90 billion tons of carbon stored in the trees and the soil of the Amazon rainforest. The authors wouldn't be drawn on when this tipping point, when it would switch from rainforest to savanna, might happen. But once it did happen, they thought it would happen very quickly in the space of decades.
Yeah, I just wanted to play that so you could be terrified. That's all. Just be a little bit terrified. Like, we have kicked the can on this thing so far, and you really just look around and realize, yo, we're about to have, like, the fire age. Like, it's the ice age, the stone age, the bronze age. All right, nah. We're just about to have a fire age. It's going to be hot as hell everywhere. And we could have done everything in the world to stop it. And like, nope. We're just too busy getting this money. Like, I really just don't know what else to say about it. Like, whenever I hear these stories about the Amazon or all these climate change stories, people are really screaming, hey, man, it's a really big problem. Nobody has time to care. Nobody does. It's been going on for a real long time now. Like, I remember in the early 90s, I know Earth Day had been a thing, but they was really trying to get it cracking. And I ain't gonna lie, I wasn't like fully on board. I mean, I wasn't on board. I just couldn't understand the magnitude of the issue. But you can't say you don't get the magnitude of the issue now. Y'all just don't care.
And you were a child at that time.
Yeah. But like now I'm not. And I probably was late in the game going across with it. But the things that people won't give up just because they like them. This country's particular thing with cars is, and I'm a person that likes a big, you know, environmental destroying car. Like, I'm not going to pretend as though I'm not that person. But like, you look at what the car get down is in Europe. And of course, that's a little bit different because those streets are so narrow and you need like smaller cars and all of that stuff. But I do feel like you look around and it's other places that have decided to do a little bit more for the macro. And we are like, no, America is team micro. But all these things is, by and large, they do better on it, except it's just about money. It's just the nature of capitalism. It will destroy everything in its path so that people can get paid.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. The listener suggested that we do the right time voicemail line for this week on that time that a celeb stole your girl. It's always been a good one, I feel like, when we brought it up.
Yeah, except when these cats be out here trying to lie. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't want to be honest about what time it is. They like, you do it on Twitter, for some reason, people will be real. You do it all here, all of a sudden, everybody, but she stayed with me. They ain't all stay with y'all.
They just get real quiet and they don't end up calling in.
Yes.
It's easy to talk a big game in like 120 characters.
Fair, fair, fair.
This first one, this guy was going to NYU and shared this story.
Hey, Bo and Gabe. I'm an undergrad, seeing this girl for a couple of weeks. Decided one night, gonna do something nice, take her somewhere nice, put a little money in. Money that I definitely cannot afford, being a sophomore at NYU at this time. Anyway, take her out to this spot on Bond Street, really trendy spot. A couple of her friends show up, a couple of my boys show up. We enjoying sushi, some appetizers, some drinks that are just way too expensive. But we're like, all right, why not? A couple hours go by, we start noticing different vibe in the spot. All the girls in the spot seem to kind of move over and congregate to one side of the bar. So we started looking around just to see what's up, turn back around. The girls that we were with are now over there at that spot too, trying to see what's going on over there. We're like, yo, what's going on? So we asked one of the people that worked there. They're like, oh yeah, Gita just showed up with some of his boys. Bo, never felt so defeated in my life, dog. Especially when that bartender handed us that bill, came up to like 1200. Girls were nowhere to be found, and now we're stuck with this big-ass bill that we probably can't even afford. But what are you going to do? Is Derek Jeter? Got to charge that to the game, man. Still hurts to this day. Every time I see Jeter on TV, I'm like, damn, that man still owe me some money. I felt it.
Derek Jeter. The thing that's got to be terrible about that is, it's not like they can all win, but they are all willing to just set fire to whatever with you just for a lottery ticket. Just for a chance at a gift basket.
And then you got to charge that to the game?
Yes, that's all you can do. That's all you can do. Sometimes you just got to know, man. Sometimes it ain't about you. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it ain't about you.
All right, so this next one, the guy also didn't leave his name or location, but it was from his time at Louisville. Here it is.
All right, so I was going to college at University of Louisville at the time. I was feeling this girl. Thought she might could be my girlfriend. I go home for Thanksgiving. She stayed on campus. While on campus, she posted a picture with Lamar Jackson, Jair Alexander. I'll be honest, after that picture was posted, she never talked to me again. I don't know if she had a relationship with them two fellas, but I knew I was done in that moment. Peace.
He's like, I don't know if she had a relationship with them. All depends on what you mean by relationship, brother. That's all I'm saying. That's all. That's dang. That's a tough go. That's a tough go. I'm going to tell you a story my homie Rob told me once, though. This is one of my favorites. He said it was Freaknik 93 or 94, one of the two. Anyway, so my man's like, he played college basketball. So he's with a bunch of college basketball players. So they all tall dudes, like, you know, they moving. They in Piedmont Park, you know, they getting love, right? And he said they out there, they've been making moves. They've been getting love. And the next thing he knew, he said just all the women at the park started running in one direction, and they couldn't figure out what it was. The girls they was talking to started running, and it's like, what's going on? And he heard one of them say, girl, it's the Fab Five. Said the whole park ran over to the Fab Five, right? Okay. Chris Webber ain't even there, by the way. It's the Fab Four, but it's enough, right? They all roll over. And so my man Rob said that later he was walking somewhere else that same day and he saw the Fab Five again. And he said this dude was walking with his girl. And he said one of the Fab Five dudes just pointed at her and did the come here with his finger. And said the dude was standing there like, bro, are you serious? And she looked at him. She looked at the Fab Five. and rolled out with Fab Five. I would just make the argument that I went with my girl to Freaknik stories. Nah. This was always an option. It just happened in your face.
Yeah, so it's funny you mentioned that because this last story is kind of a familiar theme. It was in Vegas. I imagine a similar thing could happen anytime you go to the club in Vegas. Yes. Here it is.
So my homie told me this story. It's legendary to me because one time he went to Vegas with some homegirls, and I believe his girl was there too. He went to Vegas, goes to a club. At the club, it's turned up, it's dope. He see the NBA player, Lou Williams. Lou Lemon Pepper Wings Williams there. And he walking with five girls. So he like, okay. They get Lou Williams see him, and he kind of wave him over to come over. He like, okay, I'm going to play this. All right, it's me, five other girls. I'm going to walk in between them so we can all go to their section, to the table that he got. He walk over, two girls go in front of him. And as he trying to walk in, security guard put his hands on his chest like, nah, bruh, ain't enough room. And then the three other girls go to the table. He was like, man, what you mean it ain't enough room? He was like, ain't enough room, bruh. He was like, you just added five of my friends to the table. What you mean? He was like, bruh, it ain't enough room. But you go talk to the manager, and then you can figure out a way to get over here. He was like, talk to the manager for what? He was like, you can get yourself a table. A table? What the hell am I going to do that for? He was like, if you're trying to sit next to Lou, get a table. That way I can both share bottles back and forth. My homie goes, ask how much the tables is. He found out tables was going for $5,000 to $7,000. He go back over, wave at his girl, like, hey, you going to come with? He said his girl ignored him. And he was just like, so I got to pay $5,000 to $7,000 to sit next to Lou Williams, and my girl just ignored me. He said he went back up to the hotel room and just sat there. He said, not everything stays in Vegas, and that memory has haunted him ever since. Thank you, Bo.
Yo, so did his girl stay with Lou Williams?
That's what it sounded like.
Wow. Wow. She like, so you go get, damn.
Bet the stakes of their relationship on a $5,000 to $7,000 table.
But the thing is, he went up to the hotel room. I bet she left him kicking it with Lou Williams and came right back up there with him. He was just like, welcome home. Like, I didn't hear nothing about no foot being put down, no law being laid down, none of that. All I heard was, all right, just shoot me a text before you come up. Damn, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Alexis Stevens of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Check out her story about two dummies stealing a school bus to joyride. Thanks to Taylor Lorenz of the Washington Post. Check out her story about digital rest stops. And thanks to Katie Hunt of CNN. Check out her story about the Amazon reaching another tipping point of terrible. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.